Drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Five Australian tennis players are taking off to Spain later this month to represent the country at a new tournament. This isn't the Hopman Cup, though. This is tennis with a difference. All the players are vision impaired, and the competition is the inaugural International Blind Tennis Tournament. Chris Cypriou will be one of those putting racket to ball, and Samir Mahir is the team's coach. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with some basics. How does blind tennis differ from the version of the game that most of us are familiar with, Chris?
Well, we play with a bell ball. It's a ball with a bell in it, and it's made of foam.
And we can hear it.
Yeah, we can hear it.
Okay, so that's one difference. The rackets are smaller as well, is that right?
A little bit.
They do. They are. They are smaller. They're more of a junior rackets.
Right. And why is that?
I think it's for better control, and also because the court, tennis court, it's a kind of a mini court. They play in a smaller court size.
And, so is it more like a squash court?
No, not quite. But I would say a small court because obviously, as you know, the challenges of being blind is you can't cover too much area. So we have to make sure they limit air where they can play. The bounces, however, they are allowed to have three bounces in certain levels, which is called B2, B3. B1 is only two levels more advanced.
So when was this game, this version, blind tennis, developed?
In October of 2010, that's when I started.
In Australia?
In Australia.
Yeah. It's an Australian thing.
It started in Australia in 2010, as Chris mentioned. However, the sport really founder is a Japanese blind tennis player, 1984, Takemi Yoshi, and he founded the tennis. He loved the sport, and he, I think, lost his sight and created that sport.
So are there rules around playing the game? Is there a certain level of vision impairment that is required to play?
There are plenty of rules. Chris, you want to tell them about yours?
Yeah, well, I'm categorized as a B2, so I can only have two bounces before I can hit the ball, or else if I have three, it's out. I think B1, you're allowed to have three.
Okay, and you can only play or compete with people at the same level as you?
Yeah, I do play, you know, with B1, but it's mostly, B2 against B2.
So they can train with people with different level.
Yeah.
But during competition, usually the rules is to try to keep it very close as possible. However, B1 is interesting because you sometimes fully, if you're fully blind and you play against someone who has low vision, there's this disadvantage, though. Mm-hmm. Low vision person can still kind of, you know, move better because of the hearing the ball more. However, what they do, they can blindfold the person so that people are on the same level.
So, Chris, tell me a bit about your story. Have you always been sporty?
Yes. Yeah, I have. I used to play football, but then when my eyesight went, I had to give that up.
Okay, so tell me the story of how your eyesight went.
Well, it was basically related to a shunt, and then all of a sudden it started to block up, and then that's when the vision started to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the condition that I've got. Then I started, you know, playing tennis about 7 years ago.
And how did you get into it?
Well, I met a person named Maurice Gleason. I was actually doing my ability training at one time to go to Vision Australia. And they said to me, look, there's a new program. It's called Blind Tennis. Why don't you try it out? And then, you know, one thing led to another and, yeah.
Maurice Gleason is the president of the Blind Sports Victoria.
Yeah.
Great guy. Very pushy. He gets you on the court. He gets you out there. Interested in really getting... people who are blind, low vision out there and making sure they're involved in sports.
So, Chris, what changed for you when you lost your sight?
Everything. I couldn't mobilize properly. I pretty much had to rely everyone to take me everywhere instead of, you know. Like before I was fully sighted, up until 12 years old, I was able to go anywhere. But then, yeah, fully changed. But this tennis program has changed my life for the better.
How has it changed your life?
Well, it's meeting new people it's learning a new sport, obviously, because blind tennis, you know, I only knew regular tennis up before then, but it's learning a new sport, also meeting people with the same condition that I've got, so they know what I'm going through, or they know what they're going through, and just, you know, maybe make new friends and things like that. Yeah, it's been really, really beneficial. I've absolutely loved every minute of it.
And in terms of mobility, which you talk about, that at 12 you felt like, you know, you had to rely on everyone, has it given you increased confidence in other parts of your life as well through the playing of blind tennis?
Yes, definitely.
How has it opened that door?
I got a job out of it, but Yeah, it was just more about, you know, just learning to do a different thing and just getting out and about, I guess.
Yeah. So how did the Australian team begin?
Well, this opportunity came after the program has been going on for a while. So the players, as they progress, practice, train, this opportunity of a tennis tournament came up, which is the first really international tournament that's going to allow the first ranking worldwide, which is amazing. These five players got selected, I think, because of their perseverance, really.
So five players got selected out of how many in Australia?
I think the program had over 30, perhaps, on and off. There are other challenges as well. There's, you know, some we had to do some fundraising via Blind Sports Victoria to get funding to help with the travel, and Vision Australia also contributing to that. I think the five, also the skill set, they showed a lot of progress, showed a lot of will, I think, to really learn and improve.
On RN, I'm Patricia Karvelas, and we're in the drawing room tonight. I'm with Chris Cipriou and Samir Mahir. Chris is one of the players who will be setting off to Spain to represent Australia at the inaugural International Blind Tennis Tournament, and Samir is the team's coach. So it's the first time that there'll be rankings now after this tournament for all of the international blind tennis players. Chris, are you nervous about that? Do you hope to be ranked somewhere, well, somewhere high,
yeah,
obviously. That's what you go for. Tell me about
that. I am nervous. Yeah, because I don't know where I'll be placed, but I'm just really looking forward to going over there and seeing how they play and, you know.
That's understandable. Yeah. All of the players are nervous, but also excited.
So I think there's currently no ranking. There's no,
no
number
there's
one.
No ranking.
So
right now,
we'll find out who the number one will be.
We'll find out who's number one in the world after the tournament. I think they're all number one. I mean, you should see them on the court also after 8 weeks of training, how they progress. But I think the I think over 63 players, 11 countries, a great opportunity to meet other people as well. You'll be surprised to see how some players are very good at what they do, even being blind or having a very low vision condition. So I think all of them will achieve, I think, an amazing thing during a tournament.
So, Chris, tell me what instincts you have to rely on. Obviously, you've told me already that the ball has a bell, which gives you an indication of where the ball is. Mm. But obviously you have to really work on other skills, given you can't rely on your sight to play tennis. What are those skills?
Well, it's hearing mostly. You have to rely on your hearing a lot, because if someone's totally blind, you know, they have no sight, they have to rely on their hearing to hear where the ball's going.
Mm.
So, yeah, a person who has a little bit of sight could use their sight a little bit to see where the ball is, but mainly their hearing, really.
You do run a lot.
Yeah,
you see him running all over the place. He doesn't give up. Something which is very, I think, very important. They really not only use their hearing to an extent that we sighted people really don't take that for granted, right? The other thing is actually there's no really coaching methodology yet. You know, we're going to have a lot of coaches from all over the country, from all the participating countries, meet during the tournament and set some sort of standards. But the players, you can tell that they use their hearing. But one thing I've noticed is that they also have to move a little bit differently. They have almost to anticipate after the first bounce, once they hear that first ball. There's sometimes some guessing going on. And more you play, it's like chess. More you play, you know which move you're going to do to get that ball.
Now, obviously, professional tennis is well known for some of the antics of the tennis players. Some of them, you know, I think Nick Kyrgios, well known for some of his antics at the moment, but really there's been a long line of them. Chris, what are you like on the court? Is there any antics we can expect from you?
No, I'm pretty just straightforward.
You're polite?
Well, tell her the truth. You broke like six rackets last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I'm good at breaking the balls, the tennis balls.
Actually,
I do like breaking them.
I think it's, they don't, I wouldn't say breaking, just scratching the racket, because as you know, when you don't see the ball, sometimes you swing at the ball and you hit the ground, because that's why they use short rackets. And sometimes they do scratch the racket, but I don't think they do it because they're upset or because they lost a point.
So it's not because you're badly behaved?
No. It's just because I can't see. And it's when I hit it, it's too late. And then it just, Samir's right. I do smash the ground a little bit.
All right. Well, that sounds exciting. That sounds like a very, well, how about audiences? I mean, you're going to Spain. There's going to be, I think, 70 players. Pretty extraordinary, really, if you think about the optics there. How about the crowd? Are they working on having people come along and seeing tennis played, I suppose, a bit differently?
They are promoting the tournament. Also, each country is promoting and bringing their own entourage, I would say. There's media definitely interested in that. The also international Blind Tennis Association is pushing now. It's a new, I would say, association as well. I think any sports in general, when you go to Paralympic sport, I think it's great for the sport itself. You know, promoting actually the benefits of sports, not just for sighted people, but also for people with disabilities.
And is that important to you, Chris, to be a bit of a role model to people too with disabilities, but of course vision impairment specifically, because there is, I don't know if it's a fair barrier, but the concept that there is a barrier to being fully involved in things like sport?
Definitely. Yeah, I found it, like, as I said, once I thought my vision had gone, I thought I had, you know, absolutely nothing. You know, when this came along, I was stoked. So yeah, I was happy to compete in sport and yeah, be a bit of a role model as well. So,
have you been to Spain?
No.
You also get to go to Spain.
Yeah, that's right. So that's a big, big, big bonus.
We've been working on our Spanish during the during breaks.
Have you?
A little bit.
I know. The few expressions I've shared with the team.
Samir, you're the Chief Digital and Information Officer for Vision Australia. How did you end up as coach as well?
I played tennis before. I coached as well. I come from a tennis background. Worked 19 years in sports before moving to non-profit with Vision Australia. I think just the fact that I've always loved as a player, and also gives me satisfaction to coach, especially when I discovered the challenges of coaching actually blind and low vision people. It's a different way of actually testing you as a teacher or as a coach. And also you see things that you haven't paid attention to before when you used to play and coach juniors or adults who are sighted. So I think it's a new way of teaching. A lot of listening and also, I would say, more rounded kind of experience. You kind of, it puts you down to earth, basically. You got to really look at a lot of things and appreciate things that life provide you in general.
Have you ever tried playing this version of the game yourself, maybe with a blindfold to try and understand what players are experiencing?
First day. I tried it on the first day.
Oh, you did do that.
I played 5 minutes against Chris, Adam, and Michael, who are pretty much the best players with Gina Marie. I can tell you one thing. I could not touch the ball once.
Really?
And I played over, 25, 28 years of tennis in my life. I could not touch the ball in 5 minutes. Obviously, when I serve, I have more control, and I can serve the ball to them. But when they return, which is they're used to returning fine after two bounces or three, I could not touch the ball. It's very difficult to play when you don't see the ball. And that's why I say it's amazing how these athletes, in my opinion, they're all athletes, how they adapt to a situation and they use their hearing to an extent where they can start move towards the ball and actually connect with that ball.
Did it change the way you coached when you experienced as much as you can? Because obviously you do have your vision every day, but what just got a taste of what that might be like?
It changed radically the way I learned about coaching. I'll give you a simple example. You know, when you train to get certification, you got to make sure you tell them to watch the ball, keep their eye on the ball, you know, these things like that. Obviously, you can't say that to a blind or low vision player. It just doesn't work, right? So you have to use different terminology. You have to also, I would say, be very patient, but also find what works best for that player or, you know, he or she may have weaknesses or strength that can be used in a different way, because it's a shorter court and there are certain things in tennis you can do to win points or have more rallies.
So, Chris, what's the future of blind tennis? Do you hope to be on an international tournament for a while now that you're going on your first?
I hope so. Yeah, like this is a step, hopefully it is the first step in of many more to come.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for coming in, guys. It's been a really interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And joining me tonight, my guests were Chris Cipriu, one of the players heading to Spain to represent Australia at the inaugural International Blind Tennis Tournament, and his coach, Samir Mahir. And that's it from me and the Drawing Room. I'll be back tomorrow night at 6. Up next, it's Between the Lines with Tom Switzer.